Coming up on the Social Hour, think before you tweet, especially if you're an Olympic athlete. Facebook's new recommendations bar, Twitter hates your Instagram friends, and FeeSnap, we want you to use it. All of that and get Letterboxd. What does that mean? I'll tell you up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 70, recorded July 27th, 2012. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Social Hour in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, back in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, back from a couple of weeks on the East Coast of Canada, enjoying time with my family. And now it's back to work and back to The Social Hour in my great little basement slash studio.
Well, we're glad to have you back in Toronto where you belong. But you did seem like you were having a really good time over on Prince Edward Island. So hopefully reintegration into real life has not been too much of a bumpy road.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But like I was saying before the show, anytime you get back from a holiday, you tend to book a lot of stuff as soon as you return. So you have back-to-back meetings, a bunch of different events. And the reality is, I don't think that's a smart move. I should next time, I think I'm going to try to stretch it out a little bit longer. So there's not that shock of coming back to reality. Nonetheless, it's Friday when we're recording this. So it's feeling good coming into the weekend. I can't complain. And also the Olympics, Sarah, very exciting.
Yeah, Olympics opening ceremonies, if you are watching live, are actually starting live, or did about 8 minutes ago, right now. If you're watching the show after the fact, then hey, you're going to know stuff that we don't know yet, because I'm not watching the opening ceremonies. Amber, I don't know about you, but I plan to watch them on tape delay, which is really the only way that I can watch them at home later on NBC, who was airing the opening ceremonies. But it's actually a really good week for The Social Hour. Of course, if you're just finding us for the first time and wonder what are the kind of things that we talk about on The Social Hour, Amber and I talk about pretty much social media all the time. How-tos, sites you don't want to miss, services you're going to love, things that are going on, new ideas coming from the big guns like Facebook and Twitter and Google, and who else? Who else is in the big? That's pretty much pretty much the big three, I guess, now.
And there's a few others here and there, but those are the big ones. We tend to talk a lot about that. Also have lots of great guests on, people who are using social media, people who are building social media companies. And so you never really know what you're going to get, but there will be lots of up-to-date social media news, that's for sure.
So let's start off with a Twitter-related story here. This is not really a very good one. In fact, it's one of these, like, how could anybody have been so stupid? A Greek athlete, I'm probably going to butcher her name, but I'll try my best. Her name is Voula Papachristou, who is Greece's triple jump champion, has been barred from competing in the London Olympic Games. Why? Because of an offensive tweet that she posted, which was public. She tweeted, it was a bit of a racially charged tweet about Africans living in Greece. And pretty much one of the parties of the Greek government, the Democratic Left, posted a statement saying, racist humor and jokes concerning human lives are not tolerated by the Greek society, cannot thrive in Greek athletics. The least the Greek Olympic Committee can do now is to revoke her from the Olympic Games. Watching the Olympics on TV screen, she could do as many vile jokes as she wants through the social media, but for sure, she cannot represent Greece in London. Now, Papachristou has since apologized profusely, said this is just, I would never not only wanted to be pulled from competing, but to have offended anybody in my country or beyond. It seems like a very, very apologetic statement. But that's not enough. The Hellenic Olympic Committee, who is responsible for the athletes who are representing Greece, announced Wednesday She's off the team. She will not be participating in the triple jump. She will not be doing anything, at least not in London. One of these stories that you go, gosh, I mean, really? Really? What was she expecting?
What's she thinking? I mean, that's what I had to actually read her tweet over and over again, because we've had lots of stories on the Social Hour over the past few months about people sending inappropriate tweets. But I have to say, this really takes the cake as far as one of the most offensive tweets that I've seen from anyone, let alone a professional athlete who was poised to compete in the Olympics. And, you know, it's not as though this was a small mistake she made. Obviously, it was a well-crafted tweet as far as the message that she wanted to send out. I'm glad that they actually took the actions that they did. I think it's appropriate to bar her from competing. And again, another message, I think, to the world as far as people using Twitter. If you have any type of public profile, you will very quickly be discovered if you write anything that's racist or any attacks on certain individuals or organizations. And this is no exception.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unfortunate, but that's how it works. You post on Twitter, you assume anything you might say that could be interpreted as offensive by anybody will be read. And particularly if you are an Olympic athlete, you really got to be careful, because they are paying attention. That's for sure. Another interesting Twitter story that ended in what's probably the right solution was what's known as the Twitter joke trial. If you're not familiar with this, this goes back a couple of years. In May of 2010, a man by the name of Paul Chambers was found guilty of a criminal offense in the UK and fined the equivalent of $600 US, plus having to pay almost $1,000 in court costs with his local magistrate, explaining that a tweet that he sent about an airport that sort of jokingly referred to blowing up the airport was not of a menacing nature in the context of the times in which we live, which is what the court found. He had tweeted, crap, Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week and a bit to get your bleep together. Otherwise, I'm blowing the airport sky high. Now, in poor taste, yes, absolutely. A very dumb thing to do, 100% yes. Was he actually saying that he planned to blow up the airport? I don't think anybody really saw it that way. In fact, he had about 600 followers at the time that he tweeted this. Again, this is a couple years ago. It was seen by someone on the airport security team at Robin Hood Airport who wasn't following Mr. Chambers. They were just looking for keywords about the airport, just kind of routine scan. Saw the tweet, didn't think it was a threat, but contacted police. It's what they're supposed to do. And this, he got convicted. He got convicted of criminal intent. Now, this has been in court for a while because, of course, Mr. Chambers is going, listen, this is anybody could see that, you know, I'm sorry, but I wasn't actually going to do anything and I shouldn't have to pay all of this money. A lot of people agreed with him. High Court has overturned it. The Lord Chief Justice over in the UK said that the tweet was not of a menacing character, and Paul Chambers is free to go about his business and probably will be really, really, really careful about what he says from now on.
I think he'll be very careful. Amazing to see an individual like this who, like you mentioned, only has 600 followers, how that tweet was able to be transferred over to someone who works in the airport. Because I think more and more people, whether it's law enforcement or if it's a company or an airport, they're monitoring what people are saying across social media more and more today than they ever have. And it gives them an opportunity to find things like this. So I think this seems like it's a fair judgment, Sarah, as it not being a menacing tweet seems very innocent, particularly compared to the last tweet we just discussed. And it seems like, you know, it was the right decision at the end of the day. And again, I think another lesson to people about being careful about how much they joke about stuff like this on Twitter. It could land you in trouble, could land you in jail or with a big fine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I mean, how many more examples are we going to have? You just got to think before you tweet. But sometimes that's not easy enough. So when things like this happen, it is good to know that you're not necessarily going to end up owing a lot of money because of misunderstanding. That said, some people, you want to err on the side of caution, certainly. In these times that we live in, I see both sides of it. This is a story that's going to be pretty much annoying for anybody who likes user experience. If you are on Instagram, if you're an Instagram user, I'm going to go ahead and pull up my account here on my Instagram account. I've got it on my iPhone, but of course, Android users can follow along as well. If I want to find some friends that I have on a variety of other social networks so that I can expand who I'm following on Instagram, I've got some options. I can pull from my contact list on my phone. I can pull from my Facebook friends. I can pull from my Twitter friends, or I can pull from suggested users, which is something that Instagram puts together. Well, why don't I go to my Facebook friends? All right, it'll take a minute to populate. Okay, I can see some of the people that I'm Facebook friends with I'm not already following on Instagram. That's going to be great. Dan Levine, for example. Oh, no, I'm already following him. OMG, Chad, I'm not following him on Instagram. Awesome. Okay, this is a really good feature. Now, if I go over to Twitter, where is everybody? I'm certainly following a lot of people on Twitter. What happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. Twitter has pulled the API that Instagram uses to get this sort of information. Now, when you actually take a picture on Instagram, you have a variety of options to send that picture. Here, I'll just go ahead and take a really stupid picture here. That's great. All right. What am I going to do? Now, I could send that photo to Twitter if I wanted to. That isn't broken. It's just the friend import feature, which is something that, you know, I don't know why Twitter decided to do this, because Instagram is, you know, part of the Facebook conglomerate now, because they have so many users, because they're trying to work out some sort of, I don't, licensing deal. Twitter is already accused of some shady behavior with their API. There was an incident where they revoked it on LinkedIn, so you can't actually post tweets to your LinkedIn profile anymore. I think that was while I was on vacation. So this is another incident. I don't know that it's, you know, I mean, it's not ruining my life or anything, but it does make the user experience that much worse for us users who have nothing to do with what's going on between the companies and, you know, if this is some sort of game of chicken. Amber, what do you think?
It just seems like such a strange move for them to do that, especially as more and more people rely on that social media integration when they're using services like this. Yesterday, I spoke at a conference, and Gary Vee also spoke at the same conference. And towards the end of his keynote, he asked people in the audience to stand up if they were the type of people who would only sign up for an app if there were the ability to opt in using Facebook or Twitter, for example. And pretty much, you know, a large percentage of the audience said yes. You know, they only want to be able to use social networks or different apps when there's integration with other social networks. It just makes your life easier. You know, on Instagram, being able to find your other Twitter friends seems like a natural extension. I can't figure out why they would do something like this. I'm digging through the comments on this TechCrunch article to get a sense of what people are saying. And then the basic reaction is that it seems to be just the beginning of a slippery slope as far as what Twitter is doing. And people saying Twitter's getting its backup against Facebook and anything that's Facebook owned, and just, you know, choosing to make decisions like this. But it doesn't seem like a great move. I agree, not earth shattering as far as the experience there, but I rely on those features a lot just to be able to find friends that I'm already connected with and easily pull in those networks. So I don't think it's a smart move, and hopefully we'll hear more about what's behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I get why companies, especially if they're going to be negotiating in the future and need to have some leverage, why they would do things like this. It just seems like what you end up doing is alienating people who would otherwise find Twitter a ubiquitous service. I kind of just assume that I can tweet from apps, that I can import from my Twitter friends. My Twitter friends are, I mean, I'm stingier, I guess, about people that I follow on Twitter than Facebook. So really, I mean, if I have a Twitter list of friends that I can import into another app, that's really, really helpful to me, because there's only, I don't know, a few hundred of them. They're not all my real life friends, but still, people I find really interesting. Not that I don't find Facebook friends interesting, but again, we'll watch. We'll see if this is just a couple examples of Twitter being more selective with its API, or if it's something that's going to spread across other companies that rely on it. So we were talking about the Olympics. I know a lot of people who are watching us live are following along with the opening ceremonies that are happening right now as we shoot this live. So thanks to all of you for chatting along with us while you're watching. What Olympic events are actually winning on social media? There are quite a few of them.
Yeah, you know, this is really interesting, Sarah. And can I just say, as you know, this is the beginning of social media stats for the Olympics. There are going to be many more articles and infographics that are shared online in terms of analyzing all of the content that's going across on social media websites. This one is talking a little bit about the buzz just before the Olympics as far as different statistics. Also has some interesting information, things like 44% of auto enthusiasts talking about the Olympics across social media love that BMW is an official sponsor. 15% of moms talking about the Olympics say that gymnastics is their favorite event. Kind of interesting. They also have some fun information about what former gold medalist fans are looking forward to seeing. No big surprises here when you see people like Michael Phelps from, you know, the very successful Olympian from our previous Olympics who had done extremely well. People are interested in watching what he's doing, as well as some other people from swimming and cycling as well. Top 10 Olympic sports being discussed. Basketball is number one. That kind of surprised me. Aquatics number three, field hockey number 10. And it's interesting to see how they've taken all this information and thrown it out in this really neat infographic. And I just got a press release literally 10 minutes ago offering up the same type of information from another service that will be doing this. So there's going to be people taking all of the social streams across all social media sites and turning it into a bunch of different articles and blog posts. And there'll be a lot to share over the next little while, I'm sure.
Kind of does surprise me that basketball would be one of the most talked about, socially shared sports. It's not because I don't like it. Certainly not. There's just somebody to choose from. The gymnastics doesn't surprise me, especially... Well, maybe the moms part of it does. I mean, obviously, kids who are active in gymnastics would be likely to have moms that are interested in gymnastics, but it's not necessarily that, like, if you have kids, you really like gymnastics, but... That would be, I mean, that's by far my favorite part of the Olympics, although not so much rhythmic gymnastics, but we'll get to that later. Well, we're going to talk about what exactly is involved in the Olympics and how you can find out more. But yeah, that's cool. I love those infographics, especially for the Olympic events, because it's such a big spectacle. There's so much to it. You can't possibly follow it all. Well, you could, but you'd have to be really diligent and not really sleep very often. So it'll be kind of cool. In 1 week, Amber and I will come back and we'll have a whole week of the Olympics under our belts, and we'll see some of these stories unfolding a little bit more. But now let's move on to some Facebook news. We haven't even talked about Facebook. We haven't really talked about Facebook at length on this show yet. Facebook has launched a new recommendations bar.
Yeah, so basically this feature I don't think is a big surprise from Facebook. Basically how it works is that when a person likes an article using the recommendations bar, this new feature, a story is published back to their timeline and a friend's news feed. So the idea being that when you are reading an article, you'll be able to what other friends from your Facebook network have in effect liked that article. And then the experience is very fluid, I guess, from the actual article back to the Facebook environment. Like I said, I don't think it's a big surprise here, but you just see how Facebook continues to try to dominate, I think, the whole online reading experience and sharing experience. And it's hard to get away from letting your friends know what you're reading these days.
Yeah, absolutely. This is kind of, I'm looking at an article on Mashable, Mashable Tech story about Google admitting to failing to delete Street View data, written by Zoe Fox. Now, this is the new recommendations bar in the lower right-hand corner. You can see that I can go ahead and just like this easily, or if I click this, looks like a little square, I get some, you might also like these stories. Here's a story about Amazon beating Google as the first stop for shoppers, some sort of a study. That sounds interesting. New York Times to launch bestseller lists for ebooks. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think that, and this is code that websites run. There's a WordPress plugin, but there's some native code that you can pretty much run no matter where your website is being hosted. But it also, I think, for Facebook, especially for smaller sites where you might not have... I don't know, as much of a designer who's going to put together a like button, which is something that many, many blogs have now. I mean, that's kind of one of those things you want to put at the end of any post. But that's, if you have a recommendation bar, then that's just Facebook's code that is going to hover nicely in the bottom right-hand corner over all sites, rather than me trying to find the Facebook like button on this page, because all pages are set up a little bit differently. I like it. I don't do a lot of Facebook liking because I'm well aware that article now shows up in my friends' news feeds back on Facebook. So I try to not flood anybody else's pages with the stuff that I'm reading. I have to really like it or really think that people should read it in droves. But it seems like, all in all, a good move for Facebook.
Well, I mean, it's funny, even on the blog post within Facebook and the Facebook developers blog where they talk about this feature, they also have the little pop-up running on that page. So it talks about other articles that I may like Facebook integration for WordPress or introducing the App Center. And I do think it's neat how it pops up and it's recommended articles, basically. But I'm sort of in the same boat as you. I'm not sure that I would like right there on the spot, which is the option that they give you right there on the fly. So I do like some stuff on Facebook, but mainly I tend to like comments that people put. I feel like it's just an easy way to interact back with them. But as far as something like this, I'm not sure I would like it. But I might click on some of the articles if they were of interest. So that's where I think they've done a good job, just like Amazon has for years with recommendations, right? It's not like this idea is really that new or revolutionary, but just a different way for people to browse potentially content they might be interested in.
Yeah, totally. It's a good move. And I guess it possibly, as long as the algorithm works well, it's that much less of a reason for Sarah's tech blog to say, if you liked this story on Google Street View, you also might like this, and then be linking people to some other story that I might have written a week ago that's kind of relevant. It's sort of Facebook doing the work for you, but then again, it's Facebook making decisions. So take that as you will. I know people... they have varying ideas of how much Facebook should be deciding things. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's not offensive. It's funny, I think with Facebook launches, with any new features that they come out with, my automatic reaction is to kind of get my back up thinking, oh, I wonder how this is going to misuse some of my information. So it seems like a pretty innocent tweak, I think, to the Facebook experience. And no harm done, I suppose.
Wanted to remind everybody, before we get into some more of the news stories of this week on the Social Hour, that we do record the show live on Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. It's a few weeks now into our new date and time. We were previously on Mondays earlier in the day. Amber and I love our new time, and we hope you do too. If you have any feedback for us as we go through the show, you might have questions or comments or ideas, or gosh, they should have talked about this, or I'd love them to cover this subject on a future show, you can always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Also, our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where all of our show archives live. You can watch streaming video right from our episode pages. You can subscribe to our audio and video feeds. Subscribing is completely free, by the way. We'd never make you pay for the show. It's just a way to get content delivered to you on demand so that you can watch at your leisure if you can't watch us live. And maybe there's a few of you who watch live and download the show, and we salute you guys. You can't get enough of us. We love that. All right, let's move on to some of the more newsworthy topics on the Social Hour. Okay, so this story came to my attention, Amber, because somebody tweeted to us, I believe, about something about should social media managers all be under 25? Amber and Sarah should talk about this on the show. And I was sort of like, what is this even in relation to? But you were familiar with the story already.
Yeah, you know, I had seen this story on a bunch of different blogs, and I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. I wonder what's at the root of this. And so eventually, like many people, I tracked down the original blog post that was on nextgenjournal.com. Turns out... student at the University of Iowa. Her name is Catherine Sloan. She wrote this article, Why Every Social Media Manager Should Be Under 25. Really kind of attacked people who were over the age of 30, talking about how they wouldn't really understand what was going on and how her generation truly grew up with all of these different social media tools, therefore understood them better than anyone else. Now we can dig more into the article, but Sarah, what I'll say first of all is there are probably, I think, about 500 or 600 comments that have been left on this particular blog. I tried to get in touch with Catherine to get on the show. I didn't hear anything back on Twitter. She has been kind of attacked, and I think in many ways, perhaps it's justified. The web across social media sites, because this sort of comes out of left field and just seems a little naive, I think, on her part.
Yeah, this, I hate to use the argument of like, oh, well, if you're only 25, you don't know anything. You're going to be so much wiser in another 10 years, because when I was 25, I didn't want to hear that. And I don't necessarily think the older is always wiser. But in a situation like this, you read an article written by somebody who's 25 saying, we know social media better than anybody else because we were younger when we all got Facebook accounts, just sounds very immature to me. It sounds like the kind of thinking that comes with not having a lot of real world experience. Now, I do understand that behaviors change over time. And that I know, Amber, you and I do this all the time, is we try to make sure that not only are we up on social networks and how people share things and how people behave online, but how our behavior might not be changing as we get older, but people who are getting into the game, you know, in different decades of their life, let's just say, might start off using Twitter completely differently to begin with. And so that kind of spins off into different behavior. I get that. But I don't think just because you're a little bit older, you're not able to stay up on that. And in a way, it's almost better to have a pretty keen understanding of how people of a variety of ages use social media.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I totally agree with that. And I think in reference to this article, you know, there's a tiny little bit of me that feels sort of sorry for this woman, because I feel as though perhaps, you know, she was just out there. She was writing this, again, kind of naive about what she was putting out there. All of a sudden it gets picked up by all of these major news sites online. People are talking about it. They're tweeting about it. And it just goes to show you, you know, one simple blog post that you write on a site that's probably not that well known could potentially get you an interesting reaction. If it was controversial at all. So in some ways, I almost felt like, is it really worth writing about this in terms of some of the bigger news sites that picked it up? Because this was just a, you know, a small independent site, and she's really not that active across social media sites or responsive or anything. So I wouldn't even look at her as a sort of a legitimate figure as far as being able to analyze what's right and wrong in social media.
Maybe. I'll play... I'll play conspiracy theorist a little bit. Maybe she is looking for a pretty killer job. She loves the idea of getting her name out there. So she writes something that's going to be very polarizing and definitely rile up a bunch of people, particularly people who work in the social media space, that are going to be very offended by her saying, if you're not under 25, you're out of touch and you shouldn't be working in you know, some sort of a social media management role. And then she gets a lot of articles to link to her, and she gets Forbes to write stories like, should social media managers be under 25? And then all PR is good PR. Nah, I'm not saying that that's the right tactic, but maybe that's kind of what she's thinking. It's like, let's instigate, and all of a sudden, I'm sort of this player in this conversation.
Yeah, it's like link bait, right, in some ways. It's funny, though, if you look at the comments, there are even HR managers who responded to it, and they say, good luck ever getting a job, because there's no way anyone's going to hire you, especially when you make comments like that. And so I'm not sure it will have the positive impact that perhaps she wanted it to. Or maybe she's not even a real person, Sarah. We just don't really know, because she hasn't come back and had a voice and been part of any conversation past the initial article that went online. So who knows? If she is out there somehow listening to the show, maybe she'll come on and defend herself. Otherwise, it's hard to say what she was thinking. But I'm sure we'll hear of her again. I have a feeling, a sneaking suspicion.
I agree with you. All right, let's move on to some Airbnb news. How social is Airbnb? Well, they're probably going to be quite a bit more social. They have acqui-hired. That's sort of an acquisition, but you're hiring for talent more than technology. The Batch Daily Booth team. Daily Booth has been around for quite some time. It's kind of a social network where you take a picture of yourself, usually self-portrait, you know, every day. And it can be boring pictures or interesting pictures or whatever. That same team also developed Batch, which is an app that I use a fair amount to upload a group of pictures at a time. So this is actually, this is a whoops, if I go to my photos, let's go to one of my recent batches here. This is a batch I made when I was in London. So a bunch of pictures from my camera roll. I went and I dumped them all in batch. I can just go ahead and add them all. And then from batch, I can share a link to Facebook, for example. What's kind of nice about it is that Facebook specifically will upload the full res pictures. So it's not just sort of this thumbnail type of a thing, or it won't just link back to batch. I'm actually uploading all these pictures to Facebook. That was why I liked batch originally. Facebook's photo app sort of does the same thing now. So they obviously agreed with me over at Facebook, and so they just replicated what batch was doing. But that's something that we have talked about in shows past. That's the team that's going to Airbnb. Now, I guess, Amber, I'm trying to think of, well, what would Airbnb need with sort of a social network group sharing technology like that? Maybe nothing. But if they were to go ahead and acquire some of this, if I was going to be offering up my apartment for, as a rental on Airbnb, might be an easy way for me to take a bunch of pictures and then upload them to the account for my apartment on Airbnb really quickly, or at least in more of a social network kind of a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, you know, it's funny, Sarah, when I saw this article in the rundown and I saw Airbnb, and I know this is a really terrible thing, but I feel like social media is moving so quickly that I almost forgot entirely about what Airbnb did, just because that's how fast paced the world is. So I don't know. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but you'd figure they could come up with some tool to do that on their own, perhaps. But I could see people wanting to do that to be able to share more photos and just give people a better sense of the space that they're looking to put out there and rent to other people.
Yeah. I love Airbnb. I actually use it. Well, I wouldn't say I use it all that often, but I do scroll through my options on Airbnb pretty often. If you're totally unfamiliar with what we're talking about, you're not alone, because Amber was like, what does Airbnb do again? This is the idea of it's sort of like offering temporary leases on properties that you either own or rent, although the renting is a gray area because a lot of landlords do not want you to be subleasing to another tenant. But I've actually used Airbnb a couple of times in different countries, which really comes in handy, particularly in large cities where hotels are really expensive. Paris is a good one. I stayed in a small little studio in a really nice neighborhood. The place was tiny, but it was my own and it had a kitchen and it didn't cost that much and it was a great experience. Your results may vary, of course, because you've got to deal with the person who's renting to you, and if they're crazy or if you have a crazy person staying in your place, which has happened on Airbnb, it's not always a wonderful experience. But Airbnb is really on the up and up right now. They've got a ton of users, a ton of engagement right now, and it looks like they are hiring smart, talented people to make the service better. So we will keep an eye on how they expand. For now, let's move on to our social tip. The other day, Amber, a guy that I follow on Twitter, who followed a lot of people. He was, I think, before he decided to use this service, he was following like 1,600 people, which to me is a lot. I know you follow a lot of folks, so maybe it's not as much to you. But he was feeling like, you know, I've really got to cut down on all the people I have to follow, but I don't want to go in and manually unfollow people one at a time, or even think too much about who to unfollow because there's just too many of them. So he used a service called unfollowing.net, which allows you to unfollow everybody that you follow on Twitter in bulk. That's great, particularly if you follow a ton of folks and you just want a clean slate. You just want to start over. Now, it is free. It's a completely free service, but they do ask for donations. And if you use the service, particularly if you've got a lot of folks that you're wiping out, definitely consider donating if it works well for you. But this makes a lot of sense to me.
It looks like it's down.
Oh, no, really?
Like Twitter pulled it offline. We have sort of a...
Oh, look at this. We've got late breaking twist to the story. The API access for unfollowing was disabled by Twitter. We may or may not be back at some point. If you had a job that was pending, no more unfollows will be processed. Twitter strikes again. API access revoked. Twitter, how could you? I wanted to unfollow everybody. Of course Twitter doesn't want this out there, right? Because it's encouraging people to be less active, to see fewer tweets.
But it's kind of a neat, I mean, I think it's kind of a neat option. Like you said, if you want to clean up all the people that you're following, and sometimes you just automatically start following people and it's just too much and you just want a better experience. So surprised to see them clamp down on this too, Sarah. I'm sure, although this service is probably not that well known, the reality is I think Twitter eventually will have to explain why they're doing this with some of the different tools that we've discussed so far on the show, especially since they were taking donations. I mean, you know, it's not like they were making a ton of money, I'm guessing, off the service.
No, and it was actually kind of cool. I found out about it just because this guy I follow was using it, and he tweeted that he was going to use it. And I went to his profile. He said, because, again, the site is down now, but before the landing page was sort of like, okay, put in your you know, Twitter information. And once the process starts, depending on how many people you follow, it could take up to 7 hours to actually wipe everybody out. So he had said on Twitter, okay, I started the process, you know, I'll come back for air in a while. And it's not personal because I'm unfollowing everybody. You know, maybe I'll follow you again someday. So I looked at his profile and I was refreshing and I could see his following number going down in bulks, you know, like 1600 became 1300 became 1000. So I don't know. He's a pretty prominent figure online. So maybe that's what got them into trouble. And Twitter said, hey, wait a second. No, you can't use us in that way. So
it's stupid. Honestly, I would actually use this because sometimes I go through my Twitter stream and I'm following a lot of people and I don't mind following that many people, but there definitely are probably 25% of the people I'm following. Sometimes I'm thinking to myself, why did I ever follow these people in the first place? And I'd love the ability to start from scratch and to just start following, you know, and focus a little more on some of the content and the quality of the different streams that I do follow. So I would use something like this. So Too bad. So sad.
Too bad. We'll see what Agreed. Space Guy in chat says, there's a whole bunch of unfollower apps online, it seems. I'm sure you're right. I don't know any others off the top of my head. But if anybody's listening or watching us now saying, unfollowing.net is not the only way to do this, I've used this other service, do write in thesocialhour@twit.tv and let us know what our other options are. I'm not saying you should unfollow everybody. I'm just saying maybe this is something that you want to do. And that was supposed to be a cool social tip for you before Twitter got to it. Hey, we love to get your feedback. Not only emails, but voicemails, videos. In fact, we did get a video, which is kind of a cool tip for a video service you may not have heard of.
Hi, Amber. Hi, Sarah. I'm Matt Hooper from SMAC. I just wanted to turn you on to this cool tool called VSnap. It makes it super easy to send a video message. It's a local startup here in Boston. Dave McLaughlin's the CEO, a good friend of mine. So I thought this might be something as a way to have people send you ideas. So hopefully it'll work for you. It's super easy, no creating videos and posting them. Check it out and talk to you soon.
I hadn't heard of VSnap before. I'm looking at it on my computer now. VSnap, okay. Make it easy to send short personal video messages. That sounds fine. If I go ahead and looks like free registration, we got some nice Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr integration. And in the about page, it says, yeah, it's a sending short video messages as a more personal alternative to email. A VSnap is 60 seconds maximum. There's nothing to download. All you need are an internet connection and a camera at your computer, smartphone, or tablet. You know, Amber, I think our video caller is onto something, because if you are forced to send a video in 60 seconds or less, you are probably more likely to send us something that we can actually play on the show.
I love that. That's very cool. And of course, we love getting videos. So thank you so much for that. It's awesome to have video content on the show. And it seems like a really cool service. We also have another email from Jonathan. I became a member of Goodreads last year and quickly became obsessed with it, like many people, I'm sure. I love the idea of a site that keeps track of what I've read and what I want to read. I also love movies. So I have been since looking for something similar to Goodreads, but for movies. I tried IMDb, but its features are very limited in that regard. I then stumbled upon a site called Letterboxd, which I've never heard of, Sarah, and I really like it. That's missing the E, of course. Do you know of any other sites that do something similar? Also, what are your thoughts on social networks that are specific towards certain things like reading and movies? I find them very enjoyable because they aren't hindered by being for everyone and everything. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the great work you are doing, Jonathan. Great email. Yes, Goodreads is awesome. I have not heard of Letterboxd, but it looks like a pretty cool site as well. And I know, Sarah, you have a recommendation for Jonathan too.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Letterboxd either. Amber. It's Letterboxd, by the way, LetterboxD.com. So no last E in there. Your life in film. So you watch something and you're, I guess, kind of keeping a little breadcrumb trail of all the things that you've seen. You can keep a film diary. You can share lists. You can follow other folks. Popular reviews. You can add reviews. Dark Knight Rises, obviously really popular. This seems like if you are a film buff, this is the kind of social network that you'll really love, because there are so many film and television centric sites and forums and conversations. So I think certain things like this work really well. And Amber, I really haven't paid much attention to Goodreads lately, probably because I don't read enough. I'm spending a lot of time on audiobooks, and for some reason, I kind of forget about Goodreads. But yeah, you mentioned, I did have a suggestion. Jonathan, if you haven't heard of Get Glue, it is not that similar to Letterboxd, because Letterboxd seems a little bit more of a, here's what I did, let me tell you about it, let me share with friends. Get Glue is more of a check-in, action-based social network. We have talked about it on a variety of shows on Twitch, including here on The Social Hour, which is a little bit more of a, hey, I'm watching the Olympics. I'm sort of checking into the activity of watching the Olympics. And once you do that, there's a real emphasis on live chatting, particularly it's not just for live events, but if we're all watching the opening ceremonies together, for example, I can check in on Get Glue and I can actually start chatting with other folks that are watching, so we can kind of start a conversation based on similar interests in that sense. So if you're interested in TV and movies particularly, and you like Letterboxd and you haven't used Get Glue yet, I think it's definitely worth checking out. It's pretty fun.
Very cool. Thank you for that, Jonathan. Now we have our Olympic app of the week. So as you know, I'm always adding in new features to the rundown. This one I thought was appropriate since we're talking so much about the Olympics. I had a chance recently to write an article about some of the best Olympic apps. So I went through a ton. This was my favorite. And maybe this is revealing a little bit too much about my sporting knowledge, Sarah. I think you're more into sports than I am, perhaps. And I would like to learn more, especially as I'm watching the Olympics. So this app is awesome. It's like sports for dummies, and even more fun than that. It's called Curly's Pocket Guide to Sports. This is an iOS app, and it basically gives you this really great guide that will help you navigate the different sports that are taking place at the Olympics. There are, in fact, more than 70 sports included in this app that will give you basic information about the rules and things that happen in that particular sport. It's a lot of fun, as you can see if you are watching the video right now. There's a lot of quirky little cartoons and characters that they use, and it's really kind of a light and fuzzy app, but very informational as well.
I love this. We mentioned earlier in the show where I did rhythmic gymnastics, because I'm always talking about, like, oh, I'm such a gymnastics fanatic. So I was looking on another Olympics app, actually, because I just wanted to see the schedule of events, like when's gymnastics happening over the next couple weeks, and I see acrobatic gymnastics, I think, or athletic gymnastics, and then rhythmic gymnastics. And I'm like, well, what's the difference? So I had to look it up, and I realized, oh, rhythmic gymnastics is like this thing with it's they've got the strings, and I don't know what I'm talking about. So this is the perfect app for me, because I can actually learn the differences between the events, the sports, what it takes, and like cool trivia about past winners, and who did this the fastest or the highest, or how sports that kind of sound the same in my head are completely different, and how rhythmic gymnastics was introduced well after original gymnastics was. So yeah, that's great stuff. And the Olympics can be, even though I think in essence we're all supposed to just really like it and root for your country and everyone's supposed to like the Olympics, I know that there are a lot of people out there who are sort of like, why do I have to pay that much? Why are the Olympics such a big deal? If you hate sports, I guess you may not be able to be won over. But in many cases, I get really into certain competitions, you know, the 100-meter dash. If I have a little bit more information on how hard it is to get a certain time or a little bit of backstory on the people that are competing, once you have a little bit more information, then you get so much more invested, and that's what makes the whole thing fun for me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we just saw in the infographic that we talked about that I think it was basketball, which was the most popular sport so far across social media sites in terms of what people were talking about. Now, I don't follow a lot of basketball. However, I think, like you said, if I learn more about the rules, Curly's has all of that information within this app. So even basic sports, even basic information for the amateur viewer who wants to get a sense of what's going on, it's really helpful. And it's not condescending at all. It's not like reading a big rule book, which I'm never going to do. It's like I said, it's very light, it's very accessible, and it's a great little guide as you are diving into the Olympics.
That's Curly's Pocket Guide to Sports. It's in the App Store, 99 cents, and you can find out more about it at curlyspocketguide.co.uk. a British made app. Very good. Reminder, love hearing from you. I'll let you know one more time how you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. It's kind of an unconventional phone number, but I assure you it works. Or you can record a video. Thanks so much to the gentleman who sent us the video. I forget your name. Was it Mark? Ah, crap. I should really write this stuff down. That was awesome. In fact, you should use VSnap. VSnap gives you 60 seconds to send a message, give us a tip, an idea, a correction, a gymnastics cartwheel. I don't know. Just don't hurt yourself, okay? We don't want you to hurt yourself. We just want you to enjoy the show. So get a hold of us however you can. All right, Amber, without further ado, it's kind of like an Olympic sport, rad or fad.
It sure is, Sarah. And sometimes I struggle to find items for rad or fad because I'm searching the internet and nothing really pops up. And then sometimes, like today, I find something and I'm kind of like, huh? And then I realize that that makes a really good rad or fad. And this item definitely fell into the huh category. So what these are, I found this on Shiny. I find a lot of rad or fads there for some reason. And they are personalized QR code t-shirts. So you can personalize a shirt, a t-shirt of your choice with a QR code that can be read by smartphones. At first I'm reading this and I'm thinking, what? Why would you ever want to do this? And then I'm still thinking that to this day.
I was like, I'm going to be interested to see why you changed your mind, but you didn't. I think that, well, okay. QR codes are cool because they don't look like they mean anything, but then you can download a bunch of information, right? But the problem is that when you talk about something that you wear on a t-shirt, it becomes a fashion statement, and they do all look the same. So yeah. I don't want everyone to be wearing these, I guess.
Plus, do you really want someone going up to your chest and scanning it with a smartphone?
No, I don't. That's the last thing I want anyone to do. Particularly someone who's trying to, you know, find out more about whatever I'm selling. No. And what if the shirt is really tight and then all of a sudden the QR code is...
Yeah, I wondered the same thing. I also have to say that, not that I'm much of a fashionista, but I will say that I think they are kind of ugly. I think QR codes are just not really that appealing. Like you mentioned, a lot of them look the same. And even on a t-shirt, they just don't look that good. It's like having a giant, weird maze of a square on your t-shirt. And that's really just not that exciting or attractive. So I guess a statement piece if you're at a tech conference. And other than that, I'm going to say it's a big fat fad.
I agree with you. Big fat fad. QR codes, they have a use. I have definitely used them more than a handful of times, but more often than not, yeah, it's advertising and we're getting used to seeing them around, but I don't want to scan anybody's shirt.
Yeah.
Just don't want to do it.
And inappropriate, right? But nonetheless, I'm sure it's only a matter of time before I see someone wearing one of these. And I will say that it will probably be a point of conversation. But nonetheless, I think it's definitely a fad. And can't see why you'd want this. You know, we had an episode a long time ago when we first started doing the Social Hour where we talked a lot about QR codes. I think there were a couple episodes in a row, and we had some great debates about QR codes and some great examples of where they do work. And we did find some stuff that did work, but I'm not sure this makes the list.
Yeah, I think we talked about the idea of a QR code that someone used as a resume. You know, he had it up like in the window of his car and ended up getting a job, and it was kind of like a feel-good story, like, hey, that's pretty cool. But then you're not wearing it, and that's just a little bit different. Somebody mentioned QR code tattoos in chat. A couple of you have mentioned that. Okay, well, you got to just be really committed. Committed! Or make sure that as your tastes change or your business does, you update what the QR code sends people to. Because you can't really get rid of the tattoo. Or it's very expensive and painful to anyway. Don't do that, please. Especially on your neck. Big neck tat. No.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I don't think that's a good idea at all. Nonetheless, there is our Rad or Fad of the Week. And of course, if you guys have a Rad or Fad, and you know what? It doesn't always have to be me talking. If you wanted to record a video using VSnap and do your own Rad or Fad, I would not be opposed to stepping aside for a week and including that in the show. And then Sarah and I can kind of debate it. That might be fun too.
Absolutely. All right, Amber, we're pretty much right at the end of our hour. We're in. We're in before 60 minutes was over. We're Olympians, really, when it comes to the timing of the show. Or at least we fancy ourselves Olympians. But thanks so much to everybody who watched. Reminder, if you're not watching us live and you would like to next week or in the future, we are now on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where everything is. You have any questions about anything we talked about? That's where you go. twit.tv/TSH. And you can find our show on iTunes as well. If you love our show, maybe you want to let us know. Maybe let people know that it's an awesome show and they should watch it. Just saying, that might be something that you want to do. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.